I think can make a start. We are not going to vote on any matter, and therefore we don't require a quorum. As long as there are members of the NCOP that are here, I see we've got four provinces represented here today. Let me take this opportunity to welcome you, honourable members that are here, for being here today. We know that the last time we met here was in November. You have had to go back to work in your constituencies and also to unwind. I hope you have been able to combine these two things properly and balance them, work and relax. And I hope that you are now back to Parliament to face the tasks of the work that is ahead of us. And I hope you are recharged. You are full of vim and verve to be able to do the work up to the time of the election. It's going to be a hectic year, a year of election. And I know everybody wants to be in his or her constituency to be able to influence people in our own election. So once again, welcome, little members. Let me welcome the officials that come from the Department of Education. The DDG, Bin Penny, from FET, and the DDG from the office of the DG, Vivian, the advisor to the minister, and all officials from the Department of Education, you are welcome here today. I do have an apology from the office of the minister, perhaps it will be made formally, but it also came to me that the minister and the DG will not be able to be part of this meeting because of the cabinet lukhodla that is taking place today. And I then said that does not matter, as long as there will be people from that department who will be able to give us that which we want, we don't have a problem. It is for that reason that we've got these two DDGs here who are going to be briefing us on the matter before the committee. The matter before the committee is the examination. Initially, when we wrote to the department, we said it will be the result. But we realized that perhaps it is important to talk about the whole examination, you know, rather than to isolate one result issue. Because it's a package. The results are just the tail end of everything else. So let's talk about this package, the matric examination. From the beginning up to the announcement of the results. Quality of the results, what are the challenges that we think we're facing as a country, and what is it that we want to do to be able to be equal to those challenges that are there. And I'm saying results, because, I mean, right from the beginning of the writing of the exam, because I do know that in other areas we've had children writing examinations without the timetables. We do know that in some localities we have had exam papers not coming in time right from the beginning. They've had to duplicate some, you know, exam papers, marginal papers. So it looks like there are some problems here and there. That's what I'm saying. Let us talk about the examination in its totality. That's, I think, the mandate of this committee here today. And without much ado, I'm going to ask, I think the leader of this delegation is Penny. You are the leader of the delegation, Penny. I want to throw the ball in your court, Penny, to take us through, I think you're going to take us through this document. There's a document here, honorable members. Hope you have received it now. It is a presentation by the department. And thereafter, we will interrogate this document. Penny? DDG, the ball is in your court. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for this opportunity. Can I formally table the apologies of the Director General from the Department of Education, but you will see and have mentioned that I am well supported by the DG's office, with both the Director, Mr. Ngobeni, and Ms. Carlson, the DDG, and by two members of the Minister's team. Chair, I'm very glad that you indicated that it's important for us to look at the whole cycle. This is a very complex process. It is an 18-month cycle. We start preparing, and already we're well down the road for preparing the 2009 exam. And so the results, obviously extremely important to the young people of the country and as an indicator of quality in the system, but they do come after an 18-month cycle. So, Chair, I would like the opportunity to deal with that process, give you some results, and then to deal with the two big concerns that the media and the public have raised about the resulting and the quality of the mathematics papers, and I'll deal with those right at the end. This shows the 18-month cycle. We start with the registration of centres. That is, last year we had over 6,500 centres. We have to investigate them to see whether they are fit for the purpose of writing exams, whether they have lock-up safes where we can store the exams, whether they are safe for learners. Now, you will know that a small minority of our schools aren't in that strong position yet to be able to offer learners a quiet and cool learning, working, examining environment. In those cases, we had a couple of schools using halls, church halls, sharing facilities to make sure that the centres in which they run. The second one is an important one because we enroll learners in March. They have to enroll for us to be able to prepare the system. They have to enroll in March of the year that they're going to run. Now, you will know that when we made the results available, there were in the order of 30,500 learners who had enrolled who did not write. Now, people seemed a bit surprised at that, but anybody who's been following this process over the last 5 to 10 years will know that every year we have between 30,000 and 40,000 young people who enroll and then don't write. In 2007, it was in the order of 40,000. There are a variety of reasons for that. Sometimes their schools enroll them, and in fact, this year, learners were enrolled who hadn't done grade 10 and 11. They were kind of going in on the old system. It was in many cases unaffiliated private schools that did this to try to get learners through. And we believe that in order to improve quality, you must have gone through the system in grade 10, 11, and 12. So the enrollment of learners takes place in March. The setting of the question papers, we've already well into setting of the question papers for 2009. But what we like to do is through our analysis of the 2008 paper, and this is what we've always done before, and through the internal and external moderation process, is to say, how can we improve the quality of the exams in the next year? So we write in the moment for in the setting and internal and external moderation. Those will happen over the next couple of months in preparation for the writing of the exams again in November 2009. We made a very important decision. It was a real break with the past, as in many things with this exam, to start the exam in November 2008, and that put a lot of pressure on it. But what it did, which was good for education, was that it gave a full additional month to teaching than we've ever had before. Because of the large number of subjects, because these were provincially set exams, exams often start at the beginning of October, and that whole month was lost to teaching and learning. So we started in November, and we aim to keep that. You know that the exam timetable for November 2009 is already out, approved, and it allows schools to start planning for it. This year, the marking process, we had been quite severely criticized in 2007 by OBLUSI, our quality assurance body, and we pulled out all the stops this year, appointing additional marshals, providing extra training, and also being much more selective in our selection of markers. And so at the end of the marking process, and we must remember it's in the order of 6 million papers that get marked in that very narrow window between the 4th of December and the 16th of December, that marking process got a big thumbs up from OBLUSI this year, saying much, much better. They had done a lot of moderation themselves of the marking process and felt we'd improved that. The capturing of the marks, and of course this is where we will report on whether we achieved this, because we know that there were in the order of 26,000 students who didn't get their results. The capturing of marks, we must remember that there's an order of 12 million marks that have to be captured. Remember that there are just under 600,000 learners. They each have in the order of 12 to 14 marks, depending on the subjects that they write, because we capture the exam. If there are two exams, we capture both marks. They've got an internal school assessment mark. They've got oral marks for both of their languages that they have to write. And so this is a huge, huge enterprise on a new IT system. The standardization of marks is a much misinterpreted and misunderstood feature. What happens is that we present the raw scores to 12 statisticians who are appointed by Umalusi. What they do then is they look at this, and they look at curves, they look at internal and external examiners' reports, and they say, is this fair? Now, because this was the first exam, they didn't have previous norms to go on. And what they then did is that they constructed a norm over the last 5 years from the high grade and standard grade. In many ways, that allowed us to predict. Sometimes we saw that there were no distinctions in the languages. In other words, the markers had been particularly harsh, and their marks would be increased at the upper end. Sometimes, particularly in the physical science exam and the account exam, that were both judged to be university level, too difficult and too long, there were upward adjustments. But in other subjects, there are minor downward adjustments because the panel judged them to be a little bit easy. But this process is much overblown, as though this is a moving up and down marks at the whim of the Department of Education. The Department of Education has no say in this. We present the raw marks. And we're very pleased to say that in the majority, in by far the majority of cases, the raw marks were accepted as they were presented. But when the panel of statisticians saw that this would be unfair on the 2008 learners in respect of previous years, they would make minor adjustments, and I must emphasize minor adjustments. We then go on, once Umalusi, and Umalusi looks at, and it's important to say that the DOE does not set the exam. We put out a public process. We invite through the press people to apply to become part of the exam panel. We interview and we appoint them, and then they're on their own. They then set the exam. We, with no interference from us, there's an internal moderator. Umalusi is the external moderator. They look at the exam, and they declare them of a suitable standard with no errors. Umalusi then also monitors the writing of the exams. Unannounced, they drop in at schools, and they visited many schools this year during the writing, and they also drop in at the marking centers and unannounced do some external marking to see whether the marking is of the correct standard. We do reject markers who are not keeping up to standard in the beginning, either give them just a multiple choice to do, but we keep a very tight watch on the marking, and so does Umalusi. When Umalusi is now happy about the setting of the papers, the marking, the resulting, they then declare, which they did on the 23rd of this month, declare these results to have been beyond reproach. Obviously, there will be outstanding irregularities. They sit on our irregularities committee, where we then judge whether young people or teachers are guilty of not adhering to the regulations that are part of the examination process. And then once the minister has released the results, which she did on the 30th, we are now on the road to providing certificates to the thousands of young people who wrote. So that's the process. It's important that we go back and now look at the national curriculum statement, because again, many people talking about OBE, the new curriculum. But the national curriculum statement is important for two big reasons. Number one, it's the first time South Africa has a national curriculum, where all the children of the country do that. Last year, to the grade 9 wrote the national curriculum statement. Before that, we progressively introduced it from 2004 in grade 1 to 2, and now it was a proud moment that in 2008, all the children in the schools were writing on one curriculum. Before it had been racially divided or provincially divided, we now have one curriculum. And many people have made much of how new it is. It's important to say that the mathematics is mathematics and the physical science is physical science. But our curriculum had become very outdated in many respects. We hadn't kept up to date with modern developments in knowledge, modern ways of examining. And so we like to talk about the curriculum as modern, updated, and more cognitively demanding versions of previous subjects. Most of them keep the names, the same names, so you won't see any changes there. But there are two subjects whose names changed because the nature of the content and international trends mean that we've changed biology to life sciences. It's a more apt description. And computer applications technology replaces computer typing, again, a much more accurate description of the knowledge of the subject. All the subjects are infused with the values of the Constitution. This is something which I think does set us ourselves apart. When we compared our curriculum to many international curricula, we were very clear from the beginning that we wanted to address, whether it's in mathematics or life sciences or history or geography, we wanted to introduce and infuse values of social justice, of a greater focus on Africa and South Africa than we've ever had before. So even in the hospitality studies or consumer studies, you will see a focus on South African cuisine, African cuisine, an understanding of where we live and where we come from. And then also, because of the criticism, both through our international tests and employers in higher education, we now make sure that both in our subjects and in exams that there's extended reading and extended writing. And I invite you all to look at the examinations. You will see that they're quite fact documents, that these young people have to be highly literate in order to cope with the several pages, references, and texts in the exam. The milestone then is that we completed the exams on the 4th of December with no leaks or problems. The chair has raised one or two problems. The worst of them was in one or two cases, chair, it wasn't very widespread that the exams reached the venues late. Now, if they reach the venue very late, we then have to say, you can't write, we have to set another date. In only one incident in the Western Cape, because of floods, did we have to do that. In other cases where we start the exam late, an hour, we didn't ever start the exam further than an hour late, we put the children into quarantine so that they have no access to cell phones or other means by which they could get an indication of what's in the subject. We put them into quarantine, and they still get the same amount of time. And so there were incidents of human failure, of officials not getting to the schools on time, but the majority of cases were an accident on the highway, an accident on the road, a spillage, a flood, natural disasters that prevented our officials getting the exams to the schools on time. Has failed four times. The marking was completed on the 12th of December. The standardization process took 5 days. All our deadlines were reached, and we will talk about those results that didn't get out to learners on the 30th of December at the end of the presentation. Important also to understand the three-year program, the National Senior Certificate. We argue that it's much, there are critics who say it's not as demanding. Again, I ask you to really apply your mind to this. First of all, everybody has to do mathematics now. That immediately makes the National Senior Certificate more demanding. Everybody has to do two languages and life orientation and then three choice subjects. In the past, you could get through on an aggregate mark. That means you could fail one, two, or even three subjects and still get your National Senior Certificate because the aggregate is what counted. Now we say, and again, international trends and what employers and higher education say to us, we need to make sure that our young people leave the schooling system with a broad education. So if you can fail two or three subjects, you are ignoring some important aspects of your education. And so we now make it a requirement, and it has been very difficult for some of our learners, a requirement that you have to pass six subjects. You have to pass three of those at the 40% level and three of those at the 30% level. Now that aggregate mark, you would have been able to get an aggregate but a much lower rate than this now. Of course, people have said, well it's so low, 30% or 40%, that's so low. Well, if you do our mathematical literacy course, you will know that 30% on a very difficult paper is a high standard, and 50% on a very easy paper is a very low standard. We have to now say, because we're putting together the higher grade and standard grade into one paper, we needed the 30%, which was the old standard grade pass mark anyway. We needed that to provide this huge range within one exam now to provide that. We will need to look at it, but certainly at the 30% level, this was higher than the old standard grade pass. This is where we try to set it. You know that the school-based assessment counts 25% against the 75% of the external examination. There's the Umalusi Declaration to say it's fair, valid, and reliable as an examination. It's an important declaration for us. The class of 2008 started on curriculum 2005 in their early years, but they did the full national curriculum statements, grades 10, 11, and 12. And because they were the pioneers, they were the first learners to do this. We introduced the national curriculum statements in 2006 in grade 10, 11, in 2007 and 2008. It was a record number of learners. There were 150,000 more than in 2003. When we take out the 33,000 that didn't write, we will see that we had the same number writing in 2008 as wrote in 2007. So it's now stabilized at the 560,000 mark. There are no repeaters or part-time learners this time. Because there were no repeaters, we expected an increase in our pass rate. We will explain later that for 40,000, in the order of 40,000 young people, they didn't quite meet that second requirement. So if you have to pass and you can't get through on your aggregate, if you get two subjects at 26 or 27%, in other words, you've missed your National Senior Certificate by 5 percentage marks, you don't get your National Senior Certificate. And that's why we're appealing to young people who just missed getting their National Senior Certificate, in the order of 40,000 of them, to rewrite their one or two subjects by which they missed. Remember, you can only fail one subject. If you fail two subjects, you don't get your National Senior Certificate. So there are a number of young people sitting there just under the 30% that we would like to see do the National. It's important we talk about the interventions. How did we support learners in 2008? And it's important to say that we don't just focus on the grade 12. The system has to continue to run. So we will present to you today some of the systemic interventions, curriculum and assessment interventions that run right across the system, because we also have to build quality for the next 2, 3, 5, and 10 years for the grade 1s who are coming to school in 2009. So the systemic interventions are, you will know, and thank you for the support of members, for the increase in funding for the education system. This has allowed us to employ more teachers and reduce the teacher-learner ratio. To recruit more teachers, we have a very big Funzulu-Shaka recruitment program, and we're starting to see the signs of graduate teachers coming out of that system and going into our system, and also recruiting externally from the East and from Zimbabwe. We're able to place an order of 600,000 additional teachers for 2008, and we're certainly starting to see the results of that deployment. The additional money has also allowed us to improve our infrastructure. You will know that we still have a huge backlog that will take us another 20 years to address, but during 2008, we continued to improve many schools, many young people's learning environments. We're also able to show quite dramatic improvements in textbooks and other learning materials, especially through the Foundations for Learning program and the grade 12. For the first time, we could report that 90% of grade 12 learners had 7 textbooks, one for each learner. That was a big improvement on previous years. And then our two flagship projects, systemically, are the Kids Up, which is our poorest primary school, trying to improve both the infrastructure and the learning materials there, and the Denalytic project, offering girl and black learners a better opportunity to access high-level maths and science. In terms of the assessment, I spoke a little bit about the appointment of training by exam panels. They've been in place since 2006, where we found people weren't good enough. We replaced them. We supplemented these panels. But they have been trained both by the Cambridge International and local examining experts in improving their examining techniques through to 2008. We've also started to the signal to the system, whereas in the past there were only grade 12 exams. We have sent out grade 10, grade 11, and grade 12 exams in order to make sure that schools and learners, teachers understood what standard is, what was this new standard at which they needed to start preparing their learners. So it wasn't a complete shock in grade 12 to look at the standard. Young people then wrote the grade 10 exams. There was a full-scale examination in grade 11. And then in grade 12, the exam panel sent out an exemplar papers in January of this year so that everybody knew what to expect, and that lowered tension, teacher and learner's anxiety. And then publishers and teachers put out lots of examples through the Study Mate and the Sunday Times to support learners in preparing for the 2008 exam. We also had international exam assessment authorities, three of them commenting on our exemplar papers to make sure that we got to the right kind of standard. They felt the standard was very good, but that our exams were too long and too wordy. We took account of their comments about how wordy it was, that sometimes our language was too complicated. We addressed that through our language editing. I've spoken about that we've improved our selection and training of markers, especially through extensive memorandum discussions, making sure that everybody understood the various answers that there could be, especially in the extended writing exercises. We improved the capacity, and both Omelusi and the DOE increased our monitoring of the exams and of the marking. We also have done, since 2005, extensive advisor and teacher training. It seems that some of the teacher unions still think that there's more to be done, and in collaboration with them and higher education, we will continue our teacher training. Teacher training doesn't stop. It's not just a single event. There are many, many thousands of teachers who now, because they took the curriculum seriously when it came out in 2003, and I remind you this curriculum was finalized in 2003, the teachers that took it seriously and over the last 5 years have been applying themselves to their professional development, are feeling very comfortable with it. But we have still a long way to go with some of our teachers. We will continue over the next 2 to 5 years to make sure that we expand our teacher training. We increased our spending on textbooks and our examination exemplars. And here's an interesting thing. Many of our learners accessed additional tuition after school hours. If you look at the enrollment on Saturday schools, spring schools, winter schools, and especially the amount of viewing of the SABC, which runs at all hours of the day, lessons by expert teachers, when we see this, we can safely say, and learners have reported, in the order of 60 to 70 hours of additional tuition outside of school in one subject. So there are young people who, and we can show you the results, who access between 50 and 60 hours of additional mathematics tuition outside of their school, and as a result did very well. The private sector has also really helped enormously. In the past, this was kind of a scattered approach. But through the Minister of Education's interventions, we have pulled private sector funding and directed their support into particular areas of support to supplement the quality education programs that we're trying to drive. And we've seen particular success where schools have been adopted by the private sector. So let's get to the results then. We'll start with the overall results. The bottom line, you'll see 533,000 in total. Because we will add another 26,000 to those as we result them. Those results we have promised will come out at the end of January. You know that that was an indication when we have our final technical detailed report. Those who passed in the order of 333,000 are evenly spread between those who achieved the bachelor's admission to bachelor's degree. Now, this doesn't guarantee you entrance to bachelor's degree. All it says, as in the old days, is this is the minimum requirement. Universities always put a much higher requirement. So when commentators claim that you can get into university with 4D, there's hardly anybody that will do that. The universities are looking for 6A's, 7B's, they're looking for very, very high level, and that's who's getting in. In fact, in that way, the fact that we've increased the number that qualify for bachelor's degree has mean that universities have been able to be more selective in respect of the learners who qualify. Then another 124,000, 23,000, 20%, 23% achieved a diploma status. That means that they can, at a university of technology, at a FET college, can do a diploma, and the higher certificate. Also, this is really the certificate that allows you to go on to do higher certificate study. It is also the requirement for the national senior certificate, but with a minimum of 30% in the language of learning and teaching. So in the order 60,000 didn't achieve, but we need to add to that the number qualifying for the supplementary. So you can see it's just on 200,000 that didn't get their national senior certificate, or we can say failed. But we split this between those who qualify for supplementary. It means that they've failed one or two subjects. And those young people are the ones we are urging, the ones 142,000, especially if they got results above 20%, in other words, they were close to the 30%, we are urging them. The SABC started on Monday with its broadcast. We will start through the print media to support those young people. Exams start in the third week of February. It does mean with intensive work, you can get through those additional two subjects. Here are the numbers of learners who wrote and passed, our 533,000 who wrote. Again, just keep in mind that it's the order of another 36,000 will be added to that when all the results come through. These are passed on the 30th of December 2008, 333,000 passing. And there you see the percentages. Better shown in the next slide, which shows that there were four provinces under the national 62.5%, and there were five provinces above that. The numbers in the provinces, again, showing you that Gauteng is a province with huge levels of urbanization. They deal with an additional 40,000 young people coming into their schooling system every year. It's a miracle how they manage that. Often they don't know where these young people are going to pitch up, but they really have managed this huge influx very well. KwaZulu-Natal is also a huge system, and each year, year on year, these two systems have added numbers to the number of grade 12 writing senior certificates. There's a graphic representation of the number wrote, not achieved, certificate, diploma, and bachelor degree. And then here we have the percentage of schools with the different achievements. Exactly 100%, the 0% going through. Looking at just too many schools on the 20 through to 60% pass rate. The pass distribution in the numbers. These are those qualifying, the numbers qualifying. You can see Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng producing the most for degree study. And there's the percentage with both Gauteng and Western Cape achieving above a 30% at what we call the old endorsement, the bachelor's entry requirement. So then we move on to the subject results. It's important to notice the big variation in the numbers writing. Obviously the biggest one is the 571 in life orientation. Everybody has to do life orientation. Now you'll say, look at the 571. Remember that some learners do submit a portfolio and then don't write the exams or don't write one or two of the exams, and that will indicate the discrepancy between the 556,000 and the 571. But if people tell you that our learners opt for the easy option, that they go for the easy subject, this graph shows you quite the opposite. You will see that mathematics at 298,000, close on 300,000 learners opted for mathematics, the more complex version of mathematics. Then we go to life sciences, which is biology, another science, math literacy, 263,000, and then physical science at 218,000, and geography at 213,000. In other words, Chair, in the top four choice subjects, we have learners opting for science subjects and not for the easy subjects. So there we have those results. Then going down to history at 94,000. It's important to notice that agricultural science is a very big subject, 85,000 young people doing it. All the other subjects below this, the other 16 subjects below this, have small enrollment. So that's what we talk about, our big enrollment subjects. Here are the pass rates on the high enrollment subjects. The ones, of course, that are very disappointing are the math part, and perhaps that's an indication of the large number of learners that aspire to do mathematics and science. I think that our strategy, Cabinet-endorsed strategy of 2001, saying we need more maths and science, is certainly filtering into our schooling system. But we're not achieving the levels that we want here. So you'll see mathematics pass is 45%. Important to say 166,000 young people failed the system. Now it's important when we talk about quality, when commentators talk about quality, there's very few people remember that this large number of those who failed, in other words, this exam that was set at the 30% level of the standard grade, which was pitched towards the higher grade, still was a bridge too far for many, for 55% of our learners. Physical science had a 54% pass rate, and then you can see the others much, much better, getting into the 70s and 80s. Life orientation, of course, 98% in internal assessment. The other one that is very worrying for us, where we will have to do interventions this year, is in agricultural science. You'll see it's the second column with a 52% pass rate. There's the national achievement for the by gender. You will see that the girls, the females, outperform the boys in all subjects except in mathematics and physical science. Mathematics, it's very close, 22% girls, 22% boys, with just differences in the 0.2. In science, a 2% difference in performance. But if you look at the others, the girl learners outperform. Accounting's an interesting one, which surprised us, that the girls had so much higher pass rate than the boys. I'm going to to rush through these. If anybody wants me to go back to these subjects, we can. It's all in the pack, but the accounting results, agricultural science, a big disappointment for us. And the life science, let me just go through all of these quite quickly. Now, just to look at the mathematics, you see that the achieved at a 30% and achieved at the 40% level. Free State and Western Cape doing quite nicely. These show you that our technical subjects, other than computer applications, technology, and tourism, quite low enrollment, but we're very pleased that CAT enrollment is a 20,000 increase on 2007. In other words, again, learners are going for the computer subject. 47,000 learners enrolled there, and 68,000 plus for tourism. And there the results, there's a 91% pass rate in tourism, mechanical technology, information technology, hospitality, electrical technology, civil technology, and agricultural technology. So quite good results there, that these do have a practical component. We then go finally then, this is the last part of the presentation, on to the centres, and these are the schools below 60% in 2008, 3,000 learners, 3,000 schools. These are small schools, we need to have a look at that. We have to look particularly here, the Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal and Limpopo, focus on those schools under 60%. You can see that the schools that performed below 60% in 2008, what happened to them? We looked at 2007 in the Eastern Cape. What this shows you that there has been 80 more schools under 60%. In the Free State, there are fewer schools. Very, very successful interventions in both the Free State and the Gauteng. Can perhaps explain that in KwaZulu-Natal, in Limpopo. Increases in the number at 60%, the same with Mpumalanga. Northern Cape and Northwest is down, Western Cape only slightly up. Those provinces where we saw greater numbers failing, our investigation, which is only in its preliminary stages now, suggests that in these schools that have fallen under 60%, it is because of this new requirement that you have to pass six subjects, that there are many learners just sitting below the threshold. And if they move up. It's important to also to say, of course, that if those 40,000, and we don't know if they'll even enroll or write, but we hope they would, those 40,000 get added to the numbers passing, we move to a 68-70% pass rate. There's the categorization of those under 60. You'll see that there's the 24 with a 0% pass, 475 with a 1 to 19.9%. The majority of the under 60% schools are sitting between 20 and 40% and between 41 and 60%. There's the different categories per province. Again, you can see the big ones, KwaZulu-Limpopo, Eastern Cape, where we really have to focus our efforts. Here's an interesting slide, and all education economists, all economists in the world, all those who really understand education know that socioeconomic background is the key determinant of success in schools. Poverty, where you live, your parents' education, all massively determine what happens to you in terms of your learning outcomes. Schools, especially good schools, can make a difference. Our schools should be committed to overcoming poverty, allowing young people to escape from their socioeconomic status background. But what this does show is that when we divide our schools according to poverty ranking from quintile 1 to quintile 5, we start to see that poverty plays a huge role. But the quintile 5, our richest schools, there's an 84% pass rate. There are clearly some schools in quintile 5 that we'll have to investigate, because this should be way above 95%. The other quintiles, you'll start to see very, very slow gradation, and we would want to look at both quintile 1 and 2. In many ways, these schools, the children in these schools, are equally poor. But again, this slide very clearly shows that poverty still impacts on learning outcomes. There's the under 60% by quintiles. You see that there are 168 schools in quintile 5 that we need to investigate, but it is completely predictable then that the majority of schools under 60% are in quintile 1. Now, that doesn't mean to say, because it's predictable, that it should stay there. As government, we need to work to reduce the number of under 60%. Those are 1,029 schools. We need to reduce those dramatically. And then this is by quintile again. If you do the splits by quintile, you'll see that there's only one quintile 5 school with a 0% pass rate. 85 of those are sitting between 41 and 60%. So that's the end of the presentation, and as I indicated, we'll talk then just finally, there are not slides on this, about the resulting process. We have a new, in getting out the results, we have a new computer system that we had been introducing over the last 2 years. We used this to result. When we came to provide the results on the 28th of October, which is when we had to close the system, there were 56,000 learners who weren't going to get the results. It looked to us now, and we have to wait for a final report, so I don't want to give, these are not official figures, but it's between 33,000 and 35,000 of those learners did not write the exams. In other words, they're not going to get results. We then had 26,000 learners that we then had to look at what was wrong. Was it our system? Was it marks that hadn't been captured? Were there irregularities? And those remaining 26,000 get split into those two categories, where marks were outstanding, or we had to capture the information, or there were irregularities. And you will know that in the 26,000, we reduced those very rapidly, directly after the announcement of the results. KwaZulu-Natal resulted many thousands almost immediately. They put the teams together, brought them away out of their New Year's holidays, and they captured, were able to give all the young people the results who didn't have the irregularities. We were then faced, the last problem was in Mpumalanga, where we had to, in the order of 5,000 young people whose results we still had to get out, and that has proved to be a much more obdurate problem than we had expected. The head of education in Mpumalanga promised yesterday that all results would be provided by the 26th of January. But as we speak, including this morning, every hour young people are getting their results. We have been in contact with the higher education. I spoke to two this morning, urging them to take the written results, the verbal results that we were able to give, and they have all agreed that no young person who, using their grade 11 marks, will be disadvantaged by not getting their certificates. We've also urged them to contact their schools or the Department of Education if they're experiencing any problems in respect of enrollment in higher education. But it's important to say that there's an external investigation as well as an internal investigation for the reasons for the delay in those results, in the 26,000 results. And so that team will make their results known to the Minister of Education at the end of January 2009. And we shouldn't try to second guess where does go wrong or try to guess. There might be multiple reasons. It's important, though, that we get that report and then we then act on that to make sure that it doesn't happen again in 2009. The second area where there has been quite a lot of media speculation has been in relation to the quality of the mathematics paper, whether they were set at the correct level. In relation to, just to give you some background, when we asked, and this is our only interference with the exam panel, we asked all the exam panels to set the paper at the 30% level, the old standard grade level, and at the 50% level, the higher grade level. After that, we have no control over what happens to that paper. We expect them to do that, and they certainly seem to have reached that, with many outside and experts, teachers and academics saying that in the exemplar paper they had achieved that. In the exam papers, when these learners wrote in the first week of November 2008, we didn't have any comments on the mathematics papers then. We asked, as a matter of routine, our top 30 math teachers asked them, what do they think of the standard? The majority said, you've got a really good standard. When the results came out, and more learners than expected passed the mathematics, many then called for an investigation as to why this is. Now, the Minister has done that. She's asked an independent panel to be appointed. They will be appointed this week, and they will then look at the mathematics paper and give their view on it. What we've done is, it's important that we get the representative bodies, the top academics and the top teachers. So we've approached AMISA, the Association of Mathematics Educators of South Africa, and the South African Math Society, which is all the academics, and asked them to nominate members for the Minister to have this expert view. Again, the results of that investigation will be available before the end of the month. So, Chair, those two things we can't comment on today. That must be left to the independent investigation panel, but we're very happy to take questions on any other aspects of the presentation.
Thank you very much, DG. The committee could be of late here today. There might be some, you know, additions from other officials in the department. If there are, this is an opportunity. No additional. Thank you very much. Honourable members, I think we have been listening attentively, and we now want to engage with this presentation as made by the DDG. I am now looking at you, honourable members, questions, comments that you want to make. It's your chance. Honourable Lamula, do you have something?
Yes, I think I'll start, Chair.
Okay, you'll start.
Actually, I would have loved to have the presentation before this morning. In Afrikaans, there's a saying that says, kundigheid kan nie vervang word. Die uitwerking van kundigheid is langdurig. And I've always agreed with that. And I am rather disappointed in the way results for our matriculants were handled this year. If I'm correct, and please rectify me if I'm wrong, I heard over the news last night or yesterday morning that about 2,500 plus minus matriculants in the Limpopo area still do not have their results. And if it is so, where do we get the stats from? And I've got so many things that I've marked here, it is actually difficult to work through this as it was only given to me now. On page 15, you have the percentages and numbers of candidates that have passed, and your total is the original figure for learners who wrote the matric exam 533561. And I say our pupils or learners that did not receive the results included in these stats. If not, why not? And that's my first question. And if the media is also wrong in releasing these things, we would like to know why they're doing it and the reason for it. And then on assistance for poor and rural schools. And year by year we have the same story, that assistance are being given, teachers are being trained, rural areas are being seen to, and yet it is the rural learners who suffers the most when it comes to these exams. Because the resources lack, teaching aids lack, training for teachers lack, and I've even discovered in some areas that teachers are being trained for a couple of hours or over weekends by very inexperienced teachers doing what they ought to do. I would like to know what the department's view is on that. And we are aware of these problems for many, many years. That is now on underperforming schools. We are also aware that the urban areas are actually, in, how can I say, reaping the benefits of whatever comes their way in conjunction with the rural and remote rural areas. My second question is on irregularities. I never heard the department mentioning anything about irregularities. Did any irregularities happen? And can you please elaborate on that one? And internal remarks that was not timely presented. And that was also the reason why some pupils failed, if I'm right. Why was this not monitored in time? Who was supposed to supervise that it's properly monitored and done in time? And then I would like to know if there are any strategies in place by the department in line with the amended South African Schools Act to intervene in schools that are consistently underperforming. We heard what the minister said. I would like to know what the strategies are that are in place. Then I also have one, and I want to give you a second. Minor adjustments being made. I'll be done now, Mr. Chair. Only one more. Minor adjustments were being made, and those were needed, I don't know for what purpose. Can you please tell us what the minor adjustments were made, what the minor adjustments were about? And then I've got the final question here that was given to me, said, please ask this question. I would like to know what the outcome and the answer on this is. And that is, that was done by Madima Tenda. And he said, please, like, and he's got the right to know this as a citizen of our country, if everyone has to do two languages, and that's maths and maths literacy, life orientation, why is it that this year, 2009, you are only calling for submission of life sciences? Biology in brackets only, and please elaborate on the submission of learning support material process. Thank you. I've got more, but I'll stop.
There are so many, I'll allow you to respond, then we'll take other questions.
Yes, and I would rather love a written response.
You would rather wait until I give you an opportunity to speak.
It's just important to say, I'm going to start with the last. Why are the only submissions on life sciences now? So this is completely inaccurate. What we did, and again, it's important to say that if we see problems in the curriculum, which has been very widely accepted by the three teacher unions, by the independent schools, by the IEB, when we see problems, we do minor adjustments. In the last sciences, we saw curriculum overload. We've got academics to assist us, and there's been a minor adjustment. Therefore, we are calling for textbooks in June that will be coming to place in 2010. So that process, there's no call for submissions on life sciences. We're calling for textbook writers to resubmit their grades 12 textbooks for 2010. The textbook process is as follows, Chair. What we do is that we have in grade 10, 11, and 12 an approved list. Schools should only buy textbooks off of the approved list, and what we do is we have a set of criteria. In other words, the textbooks must cover the curriculum. They mustn't be racially or gender insensitive. They must give good examples of tests and exams and assessment tasks. We have panels of over 10 people in each subject looking at these and then approving or not approving textbooks. Then after that, those go to the provinces and the schools, and they choose off of that textbook. Those orders, that's been a process that we started to see has improved very much in the last 2 years. Let's go then to the first question that says, are the learners, there's 533,000 learners here. You'll see on every slide we say data as processed on the 30th of December. So we can't each time another learner gets results and added. And what we've agreed is that when all the results are completed by the 31st, we will then include all the learners' results. What's been interesting is that as we've watched in provincial averages, it's a bit like elections. As the votes come in, once you've got 80% of it in, the percentage doesn't move much. It'll move 0.2 up and 0.2 down. So we predict that it's unlikely the pass rate to change, but obviously we will produce the results of the evidence. So, ma'am, these are not entered. The additional learners who didn't get the results are not entered yet. These are the results on the 533,000. The small adjustments that I talk about, two or three marks here and there. Again, what the first question that the statistical committee asks itself, and it's its only question, is were these exams unfair to the learners in respect of past practice? In other words, were they too easy? Learners now would pass when they would have failed in the past, or were they too difficult? They would have passed before and not now. That's the only question they ask themselves. And because they've constructed norms of the results over the last 5 years, and when they look at the internal assessment and external examiner's mark, they then see there was a question that was unclear. There was a question that the learners hadn't ever been exposed to anything like that before. They only make the adjustments on rational arguments by the chief examiners and by what statistics show them. In respect of irregularities, then, the irregularities, there are what we call administrative irregularities. That is, was the wrong paper opened on the wrong day? You know that we've had that before. In the Western Cape, we had it. We had to replace the exam. Kids had to come back and write it another time. We didn't have that kind of irregularity this year. That's why we say there were no leaks, no exams opened. Then we have, as the chair mentioned, irregularities when the exam arrived too late, an hour late. Although it didn't affect the learners, we must investigate and say, was the official unduly delayed, or did they just not do their duty? We investigate that. By far the majority, let me say that we have fewer irregularities than we've ever had before. But by far those majority of the irregularities are when we suspect learners, and let me say, not say that learners cheated, but when we suspect that there might have been some irregularity. Now we pick this up in two ways. Some cases, the teacher catches a learner with a piece of paper on them. Now they're not allowed to take a piece of paper on them. Catches a learner with a cell phone on them. You're not allowed to take a cell phone into the exam. We then immediately declare an irregularity, but then we don't say the child cheated because we have to look at the piece of paper and see, did that assist? We have to look whether the cell phone was used. Did that assist? Now, again, Chair, I must emphasize that in the 556,000 learners who wrote, we're talking about a small number in the order of 700 cases here. I was talking about where schools report it's possible that the learner cheated, but we must investigate. We obviously, some learners bring lawyers, others want a proper investigation. So that's why we call it an irregularity. We can't investigate those until the kids come back to school. Some provinces, they're only opening school today. The other irregularities get picked up in the marking centres, where suddenly a marker will come across and see there are 20 scripts or 10 scripts or 3 scripts where the marks are where the answers are the same. And then they investigate to see, is there any possibility that there was copying here or there was a teacher assistant? So you can see these are things that require careful investigation. So those are the nature of the investigations of the irregularities that we've picked up. Important that we give everybody a fair hearing on those. If we go then to the concerns about the rural learners, and we are very, very concerned that all our schools that performed under 60% get the requisite support. This is not confined just to the rural areas. I've just looked at our results. There are rural areas, parts of the Eastern Cape, the Vembe district in Limpopo, the west coast area of the Western Cape, where there are outstanding results. What we need to do is to investigate where there are schools that are not providing learners with adequate tuition, where they're letting their schools down, where the district is not providing sufficient support. That's the kind of investigation we've again promised. What we do is we call it our technical report. It's just the statistics. The investigation into those schools that underperformed, what support is going to be provided in 2009 and 10, and what's going to happen to serial underperformers, is a matter for discussion at our Heads of Education meeting on the 26th of January. The Minister's asked for a report back from each of the provinces on steps to be taken and support for 2009. We will then take those 9 reports, including the support that the Department of Education can provide. We will take that to the Minister in the first week of February for her to consider. Chair, I think I've addressed all the members' concerns.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, yes, Honourable Mazala Maguwani.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation. My first question, I would like to know from the presenter whether are all results out now? And if not, can we get a clarity? What is the problem? Where is the problem itself? Because when we investigate in our constituencies, there are still results which are outstanding. My second concern is on the the percentage pass on home languages. It is the lowest when I see the statistics given to us. And that's also my concern because it seems we, as a country, don't take the home language serious for our kids to learn that. And I'm also speaking on the experience. When you find that a child is starting grade 3 and the child is forced to go and start learning Afrikaans, yet the child is speaking Zulu or Sotho at home. And when you look at the composition of the school itself, you'll find that most of the learners there are black, and teachers there are also black. Only few are white, but kids are forced to study the language which they don't understand at all. What is the problem? Because now when you see the statistics here, the pass percentage is very low. Also, again, on recruiting teachers from outside our country, I'm worried because now it's getting, the number is increasing every day. Where is the problem lies? Because if we continue doing that, are we saying that our teachers should stay at the level they are presently? They shouldn't be trained as far as the other teachers from other countries. I do understand that our teachers are undergoing certain training, but to me it seems it's not enough because we continue recruiting teachers from outside country, our borders. Can I get a clarity? What is the plan put forward by the department itself to see to it that our teachers are at the level of other teachers from outside our borders? Also, about the update investigation on regarding the standards of mathematics paper. I hear that there's an investigation which is going on. Roughly, if you can tell us, can we get the outcome after the investigation is done, and how soon can we get to that? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start then with the outstanding results. Ma'am, if there is anybody in your constituency that hasn't got results, please give me the name so we can investigate. Our understanding is that we split between two kinds of candidates, those who are outstanding because of irregularities and those who are outstanding because we haven't been able to provide the results. My understanding is that it's only in Mpumalanga that there are outstanding results, but again, we are providing results literally every day as we're able to get those through. But again, it really helps enormously if we get the name of the candidate, name of the school, and their exam number. Then we can investigate. We can go online immediately and assist you. The second thing is that in what's our plan in relation to teachers? Chair, it's very clear that our main goal, our overall strategy is to improve the quality of our teachers, both through pre-service training, recruiting our best and brightest, and providing in-service training for our existing teachers. But because of some, and it's not overall, because of some shortages in mathematics and science, we have recruited teachers. It's not a long-term strategy. It's very much a short-term strategy. These teachers who we've recruited from outside are also assisting in service training with our other teachers. But our main strategy is to recruit our own teachers in South Africa and also to provide in service training for our teachers. In relation then to the mathematics investigation, the Minister will appoint that team this week, and they will report by the end of January. We can come back to the Standing Committee to report. We can even get the chair of that committee to give you a presentation on the results once those become available. Oh, the home language, Chair, sorry. The home language is, you can see here the results, very high pass rates, over 90% in all of them. Over 95 in all the African languages, our learners did well, and we were also quite surprised and pleased because we reintroduced the external writing paper. The red columns indicate the first additional language or second language, and the only lowish ones there are the Afrikaans at 69 and English at 70%. That's just the second language. Now, the majority of our learners do English as a second language. That first additional language, that's 70%. But again, we saw slight improvement on previous years. Again, this is our main target, to make sure that our young people improve their reading, writing in their home language and in the language of learning and teaching.
Can I, you see, somewhere on page 50, where we speak about achievement, bachelor's, university, admission, and the like. See that? I just want to find out if I heard you properly. When we're saying that these 20.2% of children, while they qualify to go to university, some universities may actually refuse them admission. Is that what you said?
This is a practice both throughout the world, and it's always been a historical practice in South Africa, is that what the universities do is that there we have it. What they do, and you'll see all better from the designation. Now, what higher education does is that it says, it declares up front, if you want to do engineering, and let me take the example of UCT, you must have a B on mathematics as a minimum and a C on science as a minimum. So each university, for each of its courses, puts another benchmark in place. This is an international practice and it's been South African practice forever. These results do not guarantee you entry. It's the minimum requirement. The universities then put something in additional in place.
Very little problem. In other words, then, we are fooling these poor children. If we are saying this is minimum requirement for admission. While at the same time, if it is, you may not even be admitted, it becomes a problem for me. Because you are saying, you tell the child you can be able to go to university. But this child goes to university, is told, no, you don't qualify. It is not, I don't know whether it's fooling the poor children or what. Why don't we synchronize, because this university is under our control as well, you know. We synchronize this. When we say a child can go to university, then we mean that child can go to university. But maybe not to certain degrees, but others can be able to do, you see. But to say totally a child who falls within that category, all universities deny that child, admission, then there's a problem for me. You know? What you see is that to synchronize this thing, it's fooling them. It's actually not telling the truth. To say you qualify, but you don't qualify.
I think that's a really difficult one to synchronize, because, you know, the requirements to do a medical degree, an engineering degree, an arts degree, a BCom, are very different.
I agree with that, but I am saying there might be some certain degrees, you know, minimum. I don't know what. Maybe just art, you know. I'm just making an example. I'm not saying art is a low degree. But there might be some degrees in which a poor child who is falling under that category can be in a position to do. I remember a situation where a child may not do any of the degrees because of this thing. I know that there are those that need some special, you know, like you're saying, engineering, math, has got to be that thing. But at least must be this minimum, you know, that this child must be able to do the subject or the degree that requires that which he or she has achieved. That's my little problem.
Certainly we'll take that up in an internal discussion, higher education. But see, I think it's important to say that we're not lying to the students. Our life orientation program with career guidance makes it absolutely clear that these minimum will never be good enough, that you've got to achieve, and the minister said it over and over again, you've got to achieve to your highest potential. Nobody aims for 50% or 40% because that's the minimum. You must get much higher than that. I think we have to do two things. We'll take an internal discussion on what this means, but we also have to then improve the communication about what are the minimum standards that universities are looking for entry into higher education, and communicate those better.
Okay. Chair, if I can just make a comment on the same point. That minimum standard for a bachelor's admission has been agreed upon by higher education. The individual faculty requirements for particular subjects is something for the universities or the institution to determine. But this is an acceptable level that was agreed upon by higher education. I think what the DDG is saying is that this will not guarantee a child access to anything they want to do at higher education. But it does meet the minimum requirements. And then they are entitled to apply to university. They may not get into their first choice, but they should make the opportunity has been made available for them to then access higher education.
That's exactly my point. Another issue that I want to find out here, I think you have indicated that as the graph shows, this disparity between Model C schools and, you know, former Model C schools, let me talk about quintiles, quintile 3, 4, 5, and quintile 1 and quintile 2 and the like. You'll find that there is lots of, you know, in terms of their performance. Those in quintile 1, quintile 2, or even to an extent quintile 3, their performance is a bit low as compared to those. And you are saying it is an international trend where poor communities perform poorly. I'm not sure if we should actually be satisfied that this results because they come from poor communities and therefore we are content with the fact that they get these poor results. Because in any case, they come from poor communities. And in any case, they are expected to perform this way. I don't think that should be the case. These children do not have a different genetic material. They don't have a different genetic material. It is the same genetic material. And therefore, if all the schools are resourced properly, all the children will perform properly. Or if the schools are run properly, the children will perform properly. We have this example of Limpopo, this Mbuili school. It's a rural area, poor area. But how does it perform? It actually put to shame some of the schools that are in the suburbs. It put them to shame. Because of the problem. But I'm saying, therefore, that let's not, you know, overemphasize the question. Because even children that sometimes move from the very townships or rural areas and go to the former Moses C school, they perform very well, regardless of the fact that they come from those poor areas. Once they go there, so for me, it's a question of resources. If the schools are properly resourced, whether they are in a poor area or what, the kids will be in a position to perform. I am saying, we are not doing enough as a department to resource our poor schools in the manner we're supposed to resource them. What do you think, TGG, on that?
Speaking a little bit fast, all I said was that if you took any country in the world, and I will put my head on a block on this, and you look at their results, you will see a similar thing to this. That the poorest schools, whether you talk about resource or socioeconomic background, but I was also clear that even though this is a little bit predictable, it's not acceptable. We don't think that this is unacceptable. But it does help us also to understand these situations. It's also important to say that that there are many, many schools, not just in Bilwi, that have outperformed many Model C schools. So you can't read this anymore as Model C schools, all being that side in the quintiles. Yeah. So the Department of Education would completely agree with you. It's not acceptable that poorer people perform more poorly. In our analysis, it helps us, and this is what the Minister's asked us to do, is to look inside these quintiles, to look then at the schools that make these up, and to say where is their underperformance in each of these particular areas. There will be different explanations for this, but I think you're absolutely right that resourcing and additional support is going to be important from the Department of Education.
In relation to the languages, said here that in this national curriculum, the language is correct. Two languages, one of which must be a home language. We do find that there are lots of kids, especially in these areas, you know. Our kids, there's an exodus of children from townships to the suburban schools. Lots of them, you know. Those kids do not do mother tongue, you know. They are expected to do two foreign languages, you see. And they are expected to write those languages as if it's a mother tongue. Is that not, in a way, a disadvantage to these kids?
Certainly, Chair, something that really bothers us as well, if you look at these results in the home language, the two results that are under 95% are English home language and Afrikaans home language. And the reason for that is not these exams are more difficult. The reason for this is that it's those learners who are writing English or Afrikaans home language when it's not their home language. It can be their second or third language. But they're in a school that doesn't offer their home language, that doesn't offer isiZulu or isiXhosa. So we're also certainly investigating this, and you'd see the difficulty here is if you don't pass your home language with 40%, you don't get your national senior certificate. You can get 80% for your other six subjects. If you fail your home language under 40%, you don't get. It's another reason that this exam is more demanding. So we want to look at, because they're in the order of 6,000 to 10,000 young people who failed their home language, we want to look at that and make sure that those schools are supporting their young people. Or if we look at the Durban High School, the outcome of that investigation, to look at what are schools obliged to offer in relation to a home language in these schools. So it is a matter that the Department of Education is concerned about.
And of course, it also comes to this whole question. To check this result, you'll find that the trend that we had in the past, where the children are doing math and science in their own mother tongue, they perform better than those kids who are doing it. Township schools, for instance, because there is no math paper in Zulu. There is no math paper in Spain or so. So those kids are actually, even before they start writing examinations, they are disadvantaged already. You know? So it means, therefore, that this must actually be given even an extra support. We must actually, what we used to call, I don't know whether this is correct me, discrimination in favor of those that are disadvantaged. The rural schools and the township schools. Are we doing something along those lines in our the first thing of the school. Are we? I am in favor of this one. Are we?
I would say, and my colleagues can add to this, I would say that in every single thing that the Democratic government has done in shifting funding, if you look at the huge shift in funding, the pro-poor funding that we're doing, the no-fee schools, the way we use our quintiles to fund schools, is that we discriminate in favor of the poor. We still have a long way to go in terms of our infrastructure and our teacher training, but I do believe that in terms of funding, we have done everything we can to support our poorer schools.
The Naledi schools, have they contributed significantly in the part of Letter Fine?
Chair, yes, I'm sorry, we didn't present that, but again, the Naledi schools, they make up 7% of the schools, they're 500 of the 6,500 odd, and in both in maths and science, they've contributed 24% of the maths passes and 23% of the science passes. So we're pleased about that. They also contributed to the high-level passes, those passes over 50%. They've made a good contribution to that. We're also pleased that in except 16 schools that produced fewer than 10 maths passes, we will be investigating those schools, but we had many schools that made a huge contribution, over 50 high-level passes, even over 100 high-level passes. We're starting to see black and girl learners coming through in those high-level passes. So, Chair, it's a little bit uneven, but we're very pleased with the majority of our Dunaledi schools. With over 400 of them, we're very pleased. Others, we have to investigate. We're putting together a monitoring team, an external monitoring team. They meet on the 29th of January to go and visit those schools that, in our view, underperformed in relation to being a Dunaledi school.
But it's the other side of the coin. I was asked by a parent the other day who said to me, that school is a Naledi school, and it looks like it gets more support, you know, from the department and the like, because I mean, it's a Naledi school. But it's a school not very far from it. That school also offers less than fine. Are you not discriminating against that school?
Sure, you know, you can't win. On the one hand, people say to us, you must have the Naledi schools, and you must give them more. And then when we do that, then we're discriminating against others. Our national strategy for maths and science is to say that in every school, we must have a qualified maths and science teacher, and we must support the teaching of maths and science. The important thing for us, though, as a short-term strategy, was to support the Dunaledi schools in the short term. But any school that offers maths and science should also be getting support from the district. So let's have a look at the name of that school, see what additional support we can provide. But, Chair, the overall strategy is to support all our schools in producing better maths and science.
Yes, I'll come back to you, honourable members. You know, we'll still engage provinces with regard to this result, but especially those provinces, here the minister this day speaks about serial underperformance, you know. There are provinces that are seem to be serial underperformers. Provinces like Eastern Cape, for instance. And what is it that at national level we can be able to try to help them? Because every time, year in and year out, you find that in Mpumalanga also ranks among those. Mm-hmm. I come from there. And some other provinces. Where every year you are just under the average. Year in and year out. And it looks like we're just satisfied. I don't know. But some of these problems are very subjective. In the Eastern Cape, for instance, we have had a situation where the Department of Education and the trade union, teacher trade union, are not on talking terms. Not talking. And all these are stakeholders in education. But they are not talking. And that situation has persisted for a very long time. I don't know if now they are on talking terms. I'm not very sure now. But they're not talking to each other. And of course, I'm saying it's subjective, but I think we have not seen decisive intervention also from national departments to say this situation is untenable. We can't have this situation where both stakeholders can't talk to each other in education when both of you are supposed to contribute. So these are some of the, you know, subjective problems that are there. What is it that you want to do as a Department of Education, you see, at national level? I'm saying we'll engage the provinces themselves. So tell us what it is. But at national level, there must be something because you are their monitors, and like, what do you want to do? To see to it that this serial underperforming does not, I mean, persist all the time. I mean, we're lamenting all the time. Eastern Cape, you have underperforming. Year in and year out, you lament. But you don't see anything, I mean, coming out of that. What is it that you want to do as a Department of Education?
We will answer in two parts. Mr. Carlson will also assist here. Chair, I think that it's important to re-emphasize that this exam was more demanding. Those provinces where there had been a lot of standard grade passes, low former exemptions, those schools really struggled with the new higher level, higher grade subjects that we offered. But I wanted to say, Chair, that the Minister's asked us the same question, the Minister of Education asked us the same question. This is why the meeting on the 26th of January with the heads of the nine provinces, we will be taking presentations on their support for 2009. And then we will also be commenting on the additional support that we'll be able to provide. So, Chair, we will also, after the 29th, and when we've been able to make a presentation to the Minister, be able to come back to answer that question in more detail.
I have heard that you want to train teacher training colleges. What is the rationale when universities can do this, can train our lesson? Well, my view is that teachers, that I came, I'm a product of such teacher training colleges myself, but I'm saying that it looks like the teachers that come from there, and to an extent, I don't know whether we still want teachers who are not trained for 4 years and above, you know, because they were producing teachers after matric 2 years, and, you know, what is the rationale?
I wasn't aware that the Department of Education wanted to open up the colleges. I think it's a debate. We can talk about that. Ms. Carlson,
answer. Thank you, Chair. I'm not feeling it's going to respond to the opening of teacher colleges. I think there's an ANC resolution around that matter, which has not yet been sort of fully given flesh to in terms of the department's discussions. I am, though, going to talk about the quality interventions that you've inquired about. For those of you who are not aware, in October last year, the Minister launched the national campaign together with the stakeholders, the very unions that you referred to, in a joint campaign around quality learning and teaching to look at the enhancement of that in schools. And this was well ahead of the matric results being known. It was a concerted effort to begin to work collaboratively around the issue of enhancing quality in schools. And that particular campaign is going to grow momentum over the next few months. We're looking at a nationally driven intervention strategy, which looks at all of these stakeholders having made their pledges and their commitments to ensuring quality in learning and teaching, being held to those commitments. We certainly also quite detailed in our planning in that we're looking at a range of efforts to also support those particular schools that have been identified as so-called underperforming schools in examining exactly what the conditions are around those schools so that we can lend additional support. Ms. Winchfield has made reference also to all of the pro-poor strategies that have been embarked upon. As a department, we function with other departments at social cluster level, where all of these aspects of the no-fee schools and the expansion of the school nutrition program this year to the first quintile of secondary level will reach about 918,000 learners, which it hasn't done before. And I think that when Ms. Winchfield made reference to the issues of social conditions impacting on learning, it wasn't accepted, I think, as a given that we need to live with these realities. It's about how this is accepted as a fact that's been proven to impact on performance, and for that reason the department has embarked upon all of its strategies incrementally, as I said, according to budget, and we know that government decides how much we have in our budget to work with. In terms of that, these strategies will grow incrementally over the next few years as we begin to plan more effectively for those interventions. I think the issue around quality once again reverts to the focus that we should be placing on the commitment to quality, both on the part of the department, where we've convened a meeting. It will be convened in the first week of February, where all district officials will be reminded of their responsibilities to give support to the schools. so that we don't leave schools abandoned in any way, which is why I think the call for us to be reminded of those instances that you are aware of, so that we can make those rapid interventions required. On another level, the unions have also committed to the issue of performance in schools, so that their members are going to be held to non-negotiable flat time on task, being in school, being prepared. And here, unions have spoken as one voice. We don't have a single one of them standing outside of that. I convened those and that particular steering committee, and we met whilst many people were planning for their festive seasons. We were meeting during the festive season to begin to look at the rollout plan for that campaign. And so we hope that we will have an opportunity at a later stage to give more substance and more substantive detail to that particular campaign in support of addressing the issues of quality performance by all stakeholders in the school. Thank you.
Have you? I put your hand there. I'll come to you. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation. There is something that is very, very important that I didn't hear you mention about parents. In most of the cases, parents are excluded in the education of the children. And I think parents are important in the field of education. Another thing that I would like to know from to comment about, there are some obstacles that we overlook, like teenage pregnancy, learners spending more time watching television. And I think that is the duty of the parents. I think, during when the examinations are near, we must encourage parents to talk with their children so that they must sit and study. Because learners are very, very loose. They just enjoy drinking, going around, not studying. That's why the results are so bad. Another thing, I would like to congratulate educators who are teaching life orientation and home languages, because at least the performance is up to the standard. Finally, I want to know, what is it that the department is going to do to make village schools, township schools, farm schools to be equal in connection with facilities? Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much. No, yes, ma'am. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairman. Mine is also on teaching colleges. I would like to know why it was closed in the first place, especially with us heading now to a shortage of 90,000, as the media reported. Are those correct figures? 90,000 in 2012, 18,000 this year, and about 6,000 in the Eastern Cape. Is that not the reason why Eastern Cape is underperforming? Is that not one of the reasons? And what is being done about this? And then two, changing of the MECs for teaching in the Eastern Cape. That also was definitely very unsatisfying. Changing of the MECs was, I think we had 8th or the 9th MEC for the province as to date. And the other one is on administrative work for teachers. Teachers are forever complaining that they are loaded with administrative work. And I believe that this definitely impacts on preparation for lessons, proper preparation for lessons. What is your view on this? And the last one is on criticism regarding the standard of the maths paper. It has been criticized widely by many, many learned commentators. Many learned commentators criticized the standard, the level of difficulty of the paper. Even Umlazi referred to this. What is your view on this? Thank you. Point about the parents.
Yeah.
I can't agree with you more. Parents have an extremely important role to play, and the quality learning project that we're launching says parents must assist. Again, the literature and my experience as a teacher, if parents are interested, it makes a huge difference. Interested in getting their children, and you don't have to be highly literate to do this, getting your children to school on time, asking every single day, what did you do at school? Show me your work, show me your writing, show me your mathematics. Just checking that the homework is done, going to the school, making sure that good progress is made, and taking every single day an intense interest in your child's education, I think is extremely important. So parents really do make a difference and they're important partners in the education enterprise. Certainly, I think that perhaps some of our learners spend too much time in front of televisions or out partying, but you know, the majority of our learners, you go back and look at all these wonderful reports that the media have done on top learners or learners that succeeded, learners who got A's, did better than they expected. The first thing they say is that their teachers helped them and that they worked very hard. They say it over and over again. Many learners work very hard. So I think we must also hold on to large numbers of our working. How else do we explain the number of learners that come to the extra classes that are offered on Saturdays, during the school holidays and so on? We have wonderful young people out there. Second thing, in relation to the facilities, what are we going to do about it? You will know that out for public comment last year, and we're finalizing these, is comments on a prototype of what should a school look like, what should it consist of, and then saying this is the benchmark. How do we, over the next 10 to 20 years, make sure that we get all our schools to look like and to provide a good learning experience? But we have a huge backlog, ma'am, and I think it is a focus of each of our provinces to make sure that we address the backlog as quickly as we can. In terms of training the teacher colleges, I think, Chair, we need to make another presentation on that. Certainly the figures that we have is that that speculation about being 90,000 short in 3 or 4 years' time is not accurate. We look at our attrition rate, it's low, it's found about 4%. It's lower than most other countries that are similar to us, it's lower than Britain and America. That is our attrition rate, how many we lose. It's not as many, and we're now starting to produce more than we did in the past, so that we should be keeping up. But let us make a detailed presentation, Chair, because I don't have those figures with me at the moment, but certainly our Director General has disputed the figures that were quoted in the Sunday Times. And as we say, we are working very hard at recruiting our brightest and best students to go in, and it's been a very successful campaign, the Funzulashaka. We certainly are training more teachers than we trained in the last 5 to 10 years. Why did we tend to close the teacher training colleges? Again, we can make a presentation on that. That time, the quality of the teacher training colleges was severely and widely criticized. And that effort then was to say, let us located, instead of 102 teacher training colleges, let's locate it in institutions of high quality. Let's make sure that we produce the high quality. In relation to the preparation and administrative load, we're certainly aware of it, and we've had over the last 2 years teachers complaining about the load of the exam. We've done quite a lot to address that. At the beginning of 2006, we put out something called the Assessment Protocol, which was a measure to streamline the assessment, because in preparation, teachers who don't have textbooks are really going to struggle. I, as a teacher, can't imagine what it must be like if you don't have a textbook to prepare from. So again, number one, teachers must have textbooks. That immediately reduces your preparation and your administrative load. Number two, we've tried to reduce the assessment administrative task. Now, again, we've continued in late 2008 to have some complaints in respect of that. But, ma'am, again, I urge you, if a teacher complains about administrative overload, inform us so that we can go and address that problem. Because my own experience of doing this a lot is that sometimes it's the teacher herself who's decided that she'll do all these extra tasks. Sometimes the principal asks for additional tasks. Sometimes the district office, sometimes the national department has sent out the wrong message. We need to now crack that problem, because we think that the two things, the textbooks as well as the protocol of assessment, should have reduced teacher overload now.
The other thing is that it seemed to me was that when you change, and teachers who haven't had to do a lot of preparation before, and you've changed the curriculum, that this started to reduce, as teachers now were teaching grade 10, 11, 12, once they've done this, now into their second and third years of teaching the new curriculum, they're finding that the workload is reduced. It's obvious when you have to do something new. If the first time you do it, the workload is heavy. I'm interested to see, now that you've taught it, whether the workload is still heavy. Again, I'm very interested to come and assist in any case where a teacher indicates to you that the workload is great. Because we definitely, our teachers must teach and they must enjoy it. They mustn't be sidetracked with assessment or administrative overload. Let's see what we can do to address that. So I don't think it's my place to comment on the maths paper. I'm not a mathematician. But again, it's important to say that many people said it was a good standard. And I think that you need to give us all the names of these many commentators who provided this, because I think it's important that we address the perception of many commentators and whether it is many, because there are equally many who have said it's a good quality. That's why I think it's important that the minister establish an independent team that can then pronounce on this.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to make one small addition to the question that followed about teacher support. We've also, through the same quality learning and teaching campaign, all stakeholders there have committed to ensuring that a teacher development summit be convened. And yesterday, a date around about June was suggested, but it will be preceded by a range of engagements of a consultative level with teachers, their representative unions, and with the department and its officials. It was also agreed that there would be experts called in from various higher education institutions, both local and international, for us to begin to shape the teacher support strategy, because I think many of the questions that have emerged during the course of this session, it's also based on what kind of support teachers are being given, of a fundamental nature. And I think it also points to what the minister pointed out when she released the results on the 30th of December, and that is that when we look at the curriculum, and this being the first examination of the National Curriculum Statement, we also need to bear in mind that it's a very complex set of changes that have evolved over the last decade, and that what we actually need to do is to ensure that the level of curriculum interpretation is enhanced among teachers. We're also calling on our higher education institutions and those that are training our teachers to begin to develop those levels of interpretation, because we also don't want to fuel the notion that teachers are textbook dependent and lack the analytical skills to begin to interpret the curriculum effectively. We want to see that there's a marriage of those instances so that we can begin to, in fact, have a community of total support around schools, not only from the teachers, but amongst the community members and a range of experts as far as possible. Thank you.
Thank you very much. My last question is, two last ones. Yesterday, I was listening over the radio. Victoria University was saying they are now reducing tuition fees by 1%. I was very interested. I wanted to listen carefully. They were saying instead of increasing tuition fees to 10%, by 10%, we will this year increase it by 9%. Now, just in my mind, I'm just asking whether is that decreasing tuition fee or what? I just want you to comment on that and tell me whether you agree with them that they are actually decreasing tuition fee. Or just a question of the increment is not 10%, it's 9%. There is increment. And therefore they can't talk of reduction of tuition fee. They must say reduction of increment. These learners who have passed matric. Some can go to university, others can go to technicons and the like. Is there any mechanism to track as to where our learners are actually ending? At the end of it all, there, how many of the, will we be able to know as to how many of these trailblazers in the new curriculum will, make it at the end? For instance, get degrees or get whatever, become engineers and the like, that type of situation. Will we be in a position to know? Or this is just the end of us facing them, knowing that so many of us, so many of us end up there. What is it? Can we be able to trace, to track them down? Now, we have been told that some of the problems that actually were experienced, that has resulted in some results, especially in Mpumalanga, not coming out on time and the like, is the fact that schools did not submit the 25% year, the year mark or what, you know? They have not submitted that amount, that in time. They have not, some have submitted, others did not even submit. Just a conglomeration of reasons, I don't know. What? Why is it that? Couldn't we foresee this? I mean, if we are going to examination, here next week we are writing examination, and here at school they have not submitted anything. And why were they not follow-ups, for instance, to see to it that the schools are doing what they are supposed to do? The same question we'll ask Pumala, I think. But I just want to know, from the National Department, what is it that we have done to see to it that all schools are submitting that year mark? Because they've got to submit it. Because kids are examined on 75% and the other 25% to make 100%. And here are schools that do not do it. And nobody suspects it. Nobody foresees it up to the time of examination. I think there's a problem somewhere there. And then, are we assured that this time around, all schools have received their books, textbooks, stationery, everything, if all systems go? What is it that we are going to do? What is still a problem? What is it that we are going to do as a country, for instance? To see, you know, the minister has been saying all the time that the schools must, teachers must start teaching on the same, on the day of opening. But I can tell you, in my province, in my township, I've spoken to several principals, but this is not fair, you know? The whole week, schools have opened, but there's no teaching taking place. But this is not fair to our children. But it happens year in and year out. Is there no mechanism? Is there nothing that we can do as a department to see to it that we enforce this whole question of teaching on the first day? This thing of children full in town, children with uniforms and the like all the time. Is there no way in which you can make the police to arrest them? Because they're not supposed to be there. They are not supposed to, but they are there at school in town, in school uniforms. They are not at school. Are they all of them having permission to be there? What's the problem? It looks like that, especially township children. The big problem. In the rural areas, when it is payday for the elderly people, at the pay point, these kids are there at the pay point. You don't know what are they? They're not getting it, but they are there at the pay point. It's a problem that we are facing. What is it that we can do? Because we are so frustrated when we see all these things in our province. It's a big problem. They are not going to comment. I know we are as frustrated as we are, but is anyone not going to comment on that?
Let me start at the top. Each of the universities last year have to, in September, put out what its fees are going to be. And almost all universities, because of increased costs, had to raise their fees. What was very good was that because of the increased subsidy to universities by the Department of Education, by Treasury, is that at least three universities have announced that the amount that they projected as fees would be reduced. In other words, the additional subsidy has been given to the students to alleviate the fees, and we're really pleased about that. It's not only the University of Pretoria, but we're also pleased that they made a statement in this result. So you're quite right. It's not a reduction in the 2008 fees, but it's in a reduction on what was published on the expectation. So it is an easing of the burden for students. In terms of tracking learners, I think it's a good idea, and I think that we should do as much as we can to track all the learners, all 560,000, because there will be some which we can pick up immediately who wrote the supplementary, and we can give you a picture of how many wrote and then how many passed. There will be those who go to university. There's a very interesting and systematic, and we can get a report to you. Higher Education South Africa is doing what they're calling a benchmarking exercise. Now, many people have misinterpreted this and said the higher education doesn't trust the National Senior Certificate, so it's doing placement tests. That's not true at all. Higher Education has accepted the National Senior Certificate because they've worked with us on that and they've looked at the quality. What they're interested in is, does the National Senior Certificate predict success at university? What kinds of maths and science, history, geography is a predictive success at university? Now, that report will come out in June because all those who come into the National Senior Certificate, with the National Senior Certificate in higher education, are being tracked and are going through benchmark testing. We will do the same at our FET colleges to track any of these learners. I think the key thing then is to see whether we can't, through SARS or some other mechanism, start to track learners who didn't go into further or higher education, who went into the workplace, and see how successful they are. So we'll take that up as a suggestion from you. Chair, in relation to the earmark from provinces, I think this is exactly what the investigation by the Umalusi and the Department of Education must investigate. We certainly know that there were some teachers and some districts that didn't submit the earmark. We don't know the extent of that problem. It might be very small. We need to look at the extent of the problem and why that happened. So that is exactly the reason for the investigation. We will be able to report to you on that at the end of January. Are we really all systems go? I think that we've had a fairly successful start to the year. Again, we need the detail. Which schools didn't start teaching on time and why not? But I think that if you listen to this, Carlos, it is all our responsibility now. We need to find out and ask kids. When I walked here this morning, I saw six children walking to school at 8:10. I went and asked them, and I asked their parents, why are you not at school? School starts before 8:00. You shouldn't be here on the streets at 8:15. It is all our responsibility, not to arrest, but to make people, everybody, parents and teachers accountable for making kids off on time every single day. And I think that's what the Quality Learning Project is saying. We should be every single 200 days, our learners must be in school being taught for 5 to 6 hours a day for the full 200 days of the school year. I want to add to the issue of the tracking system. I mean, I know that this is also about incremental development, but the ministry also launched the learner tracking system in late 2008. Which will be fully implemented during late 2009 and fully functional by 2010. A lot of information is being loaded during the course of this year to indicate so that we can begin to track learners from the point of registration in grade R right through their school career. It will also assist us in tracking learners that disappear then from the system so that we can ensure that our throughput rate at the end of the expected learning curve would have been met so that we can begin to see exactly where a learner would have dropped out or migrated to another province and that we can eventually see this through right through to higher education and the world of work. So the LURIT system is, it's loaded onto our website information around that, so anybody who wants to acquaint themselves with the details will find that they're under the acronym LURIT, L-U-R-I-T-S.
Thank you. No, I think arrest was a strong term. What are you really mentioned? They pick them up. Take them back to school. The police. Pick them up, take them to school. And say, is this child having permission? You know? So that they know that once they are found there, they can be picked up by the police, they can be uplifted, and taken back to school. You know? Good for you to confront them. I think all of us must confront them, you know. That will be also one of the ways of confronting.
Yes. It is now because we've started to see, if we look at this province, two high schools started a week ago with their grade 12 learners. I think that the program Ms. Carlos has been talking about has started to bite already. And I'll give you an example, but we have to know, if you find that there's a school that hasn't started teaching, you need to give us the name so that we can follow up.
Okay.
But I'll give you another example. This week, two private sector organizations asked me to speak at a conference where teachers had been invited. In one case, 200, in another case, 300. Those private sector conferences were taking place at school time. And I said, because of our campaign, I refused to speak at that, not even to open it or close it, because one of them has cancelled the conference and is now on a Friday night and on a Saturday morning. I think we all have to continue to say that that our school days are sacred time. They shouldn't be disrupted for anything.
No, I think we will support you on that. But school hours must be school hours. In the department must not organize workshops during school hours. And sometimes you may think you are organizing a workshop at 3 o'clock that's after school, but the teachers are going to travel long distance to that workshop and therefore they leave the school at 12. So it's like organizing that workshop during school hours, you see. But I think you must be very careful on some of those things. And thank you very much. My other members, do you have any other? Doesn't look like that. Any other thing? Thank you very much, DGG.